Dun 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 dun. That's ABC.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was every time I start thinking about one of them, it sounds like Nobody Does It Better. I forget what that song's actually called, but the one by Carly Simon.
Uh-huh. The James Bond one?
Theme.
Baby, You're the Best. The Spy Who Loved Me.
Spy Who Loved Me. I think that's actually what the song's called, too, even though it's not mentioned in it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
She says that in it. She does. At one point, it's titular. Pun intended, because it's a Bond movie.
There's no tits in those. There is in the credits, quite a bit. Like, barely shadowed out.
Right. And that the actress... I just said out,
like a Canadian. Shadowed out.
Shadowed out.
Out.
I'm sorry, but, you know...
Filthy Canadians. Filthy Canucks.
Hey.
We got any of those listeners? Any Canuck listeners?
There might be some cross transfer.
One of my cousins is a Canuck now. It's funny.
Now?
Yeah.
I have to be born.
No.
So not like becoming a Highlander.
No.
So welcome to the...
Welcome to Ian's podcast.
Yeah, right. Tonight you're running the show. I forgot.
I'm not running anything.
No,
you're
running
it.
The show.
Go
tonight.
For it.
Tonight we're going to talk about...
Check it out.
What do you want to do? You want to talk about Cosmopolis?
Well, how'd you say that? Sure, let's talk about Cosmopolis first. Cosmopolis...
It was a big week on
Cronenberg,
Netflix.
Pattinson, Robert Pattinson, Robert mm-hmm. J. Pattinson. I don't know what his middle name is, but let's go with that. J-A-I, like Michael
yeah.
J. White.
Based on the book by Delroy Lindo. Now, what is the guy's name? It's
Don DeLillo.
Don DeLillo.
Yeah, if that's how you pronounce it.
Cronenberg adapted the screenplay.
Yeah, Cronenberg himself adapted it.
It's very talky, but it's interesting stuff.
Now,
it's good stuff. I mean, it's not blow your mind.
We've heard a little bit of what I thought about it.
Right.
So let's hear your take now, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Okay.
Go.
Well, I don't think this is one of those, because I really didn't have much... I had heard kind of less than favorable things about it,
yeah,
but,
I had to.
But nothing like this is awful. I think it's just kind of...
Has Cronenberg made awful?
I don't know. I don't remember hearing hugely great things about the psychology one, but then again...
It got favorable reviews, but they said it was like, why? Why make it? Right?
Yeah, okay.
Because there's no wounds to have sex with in it.
That's a good point. So this is... I don't know if it's particularly prescient. Kind of is, I guess, because of the whole financial thing. But it's good in that it's a little more universal than that. I mean, like any ups and downs of markets and things. You know, so he's the
but it's about the modern state of things. It doesn't necessarily have to be that it's very recent. I think the book is from 2007 or something like that. So
it was written before the collapse.
Yeah, but the book predicted stuff like that.
Well, sure, because it makes sense.
Though, I mean, he greatly had to contract what was in the book to...
Probably. The rich guy wakes up one day and wants to go see an old friend of his and get a haircut. And that's what they do. And it's the same day that the president's in town. And you know what, to me, it feels like? Which is odd because it's a novel adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels a lot like a stage play adaptation.
I like the idea of having to get across town. It's like the Warriors.
It's cool.
It's like the Warriors. It has got to get across town, right?
Right.
But it's because he wants to. It's not because they have to.
No, right. No.
So the stakes are nothing.
For a while they aren't, but that starts to adjust and then it becomes a little more bizarre.
It ends up being about his character and his fascination with his ability to be wrong, his ability to die, all these things that he seemingly shouldn't have to worry about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess, but...
He's a 28-year-old multi-billionaire.
Right.
Who's
kind of been on the top of things for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe one of the real... I wouldn't call it a flaw, but I think maybe something that's missing from what the story maybe wants you to have is... They convey it a little, but not really strongly, and with his, like, adherence to the automobile, to the limo, you kind of get this sense that he is very much so insular. You know, maybe he spent most of his time in his office for years and years and years and years. Like,
sure.
Practically
and this
lives
is
in
his
office.
Way to get out.
And this is his way. And it's like he's trying to get out, but he's not really. But it, you know what I mean? It would have almost been nice to have had, like, 15 minutes of seeing his the day before, where it's just him in his office all day for 24 hours.
I don't see the point of that.
Maybe you didn't need it. It's one aspect of the character that you kind of can glean in other respects. You know, he's got the hypochondria that isn't really hypochondria
either. I don't think it's hypochondria. I think it's just...
Because he can.
It's because he can.
And he's big on information and data.
Yeah.
He wants to have
a constant input.
Aggregate of stuff, which is good at the beginning. You kind of get that's something, but it sort of quickly kind of doesn't become sexy or as important.
One thing I found
looking
was
at screens doesn't
really fascinating
translate
was
to movies, you know?
Just about every conversation is very philosophical. And quickly, in the beginning, you meet two of his IT people.
Yeah.
Very quickly, and they explain different things. You meet his financial officer. You meet, you know, this person and that person, his art dealer. And gosh, I didn't recognize her at first because she looked so old. But that's, what's her name?
Art dealer?
Yeah,
Juliette Binoche.
Binoche, yeah.
Is she still around?
Yeah, she's still around. But his interactions with everyone is, you know, first of all, with all the women except for like two of them, it's sexual interactions.
I don't think it's that many. It's two that there's two that he actually has sex with in the movie. One is one of the new security guards that's added,
yeah.
And the other is the art dealer.
That's
Samantha Morton. He does not have sex with.
Okay. No, I know he didn't.
Wife,
do with Morton. He doesn't do it with his wife.
He's trying to do it with his wife. It's kind of like one of those celebrity marriages.
But what's interesting is that the one thing. I think it's fascinating about the character is that he. The only thing that's denied him. Is his wife's sexuality. That's the only thing that's denied him.
It's not even
constantly
denied
to
him.
But it is. She says she's not, like, the time's not right and stuff, and he's like, I need to do it now. Like, he wants to do it because then he can cast her aside, like everything else, and be done with it, because...
I didn't get that necessarily.
They butt heads about stuff.
I felt like he was really trying to consummate and be grounded in that relationship on some
respect. I don't think he was.
But he was straying, of course, and she kept using that against him, which is perfectly justifiable. So, I mean, it's always strange.
But every conversation was philosophical with everyone. And then they throw in... I mean, it's never art house, but there's a lot of art house-esque touches in it with him suddenly deciding to kill his head of security.
Right.
Things are just really out of left field. And he never shows any fear about anything whatsoever. And so when he's fired upon from the street, he just kind of runs up there and, you know, introduces himself to the situation. They both have guns, and neither of them ever seem afraid of anything.
Well, he shoots but misses in, like,
a
short span of space when Giamatti first comes out.
Right.
And, like, a reaction knee-jerk thing.
And you know what's funny is I
he's scared
I
at the end,
this,
too.
I thought about this at some point after watching it, was that the juxtaposition of Giamatti and Pattinson was really one of actors in many parts, because Giamatti is a very powerful emotive actor,
right?
And Pattinson, I think, was chosen for this role because he's very
like a Reeves kind of.
Well, I think he's a better actor than Keanu Reeves pretty easily, but I don't think he's wooden, but he's very, let's say he's plastic. The most he was ever asked to do in the Twilight films was blink a lot when he needed to show something going on inside. But in this case, this character doesn't have to show something going on inside because he just says what he thinks. And what he thinks is something very robotic and you know. But the idea that... I thought the interesting theme is anytime Cronenberg's been going to the sci-fi well recently, it's been about something to do with collapses of systems, right? Existenz follows that. It's like
they're all about that. I mean, Videodrome has it's either collapse of a system or
it's new technology,
it's change
leading.
It's,
yeah, new
they
technology
men,
bringing
they
in
mention
to change
it,
something.
They mention
else.
It in this. They talk about the sort of disruptive or destructive nature of different systems or whatever.
Sure.
You know, like it's one thing has.
And
to
I said
die,
this to you after I watched it. I've just done messaging. I said that Cronenberg is really a thematic director.
Mm-hmm.
The movies are about the theme more so than the plot in many cases. In this case, there is a through line. but it's so philosophical all the way through that everything touches on the theme over and over. And,
oh, yeah.
And you know, the ways...
It kind of has to be, because it is more like a play. It is like, sure, there's a destination to get to,
yeah.
but that's... I mean, we don't even know what he needs to get a haircut. It doesn't have any, like,
yeah.
intrinsic, like, it's not like he needs to...
And then it's, what's awesome is that he gets half a haircut when
whatever.
He leaves.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And he's still got pie chunks
yeah.
stuck in his hair at
right.
the end of the movie. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to say... You can compare it to The Warriors, another sort of journey mostly at night through the city kind of. I've never seen After Hours. I've always wanted to see that. But, I mean, like, all these different kind of movies about just, like, a
what
character.
What is that, John Goodman? John
no,
Turturro?
That's Griffin Dunne. And it's a...
Oh, Griffin Dunne.
It's Scorsese.
Who cares? What is
oh.
it?
Okay.
I don't even
you
know
were all set to like be like, oh, a bunch of nope, and then it's Scorsese.
No, I don't care. I don't care what it is.
You don't
I,
care?
I,
it's yeah. just about some guy's crazy hijinks in New York.
Nobody cares about hijinks.
Okay.
You like hijinks.
I'm using the wrong words sometimes, I guess. Or I'm just using them with great liberal disregard, you know?
It's interesting that this I think this film can be considered sci-fi. It's set in a relatively... now period.
It never really
it might be
makes
a little futuristic.
Explicit. But yeah, it's sort of,
but,
sort of...
But it's technologies that don't quite exist yet, especially inside the limo.
Certainly looks tripped out.
Yeah, and he's got... I just love his... if I had that, no matter how much money I had, if I had a lot of money dumped into a limo like that, right?
Right.
Tons and tons. And then he had the whole thing. They explain what they did to it and everything at some
yeah.
point. And then when he's having a conversation with someone and there's people spray-painting outside of it and beating it, he just completely ignores it because he just doesn't care at all. And that's just, like, the callousness of that character is really... I think it's a fascinating character. I don't know.
Yeah. No, there's definitely some interesting things there, and I think that towards the end... I mean, you talk about him not being afraid of death and everything, and I think that's... That's sort of part of it. I think one of it, there's the callous kind of like, it's not going to be a concern.
Right.
You see
but,
that.
But
it,
it's funny how he argues against the idea of him needing to die, almost as though he just wants to argue.
Yeah, well, I mean, because that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's trying to put forth the final argument in what for him is just a sort of series of perpetual negotiations or confrontations that... For the most part, are pretty minor, you know. Like you say, we're secure. Yeah, we're secure. Okay. So, are you?
And
sure?
when he has
you
the know? One conversation with one IT guy, when the guy says, "I don't want to answer your question because no matter what I say, it'll lessen
yeah,
your
yeah.
opinion of me."
You'll find a way for me to be wrong.
Somebody's car out there. Had a little
yep. It's apt
yeah.
to the discussion. So anyway, so by the end, and Giamatti kind of hits him with the asymmetry angle.
Right.
He's left, kind of. I think. On some way, he kind of feels like he deserves the punishment. Like, he's lived his whole life being like he's ahead of the game, he can control these things, he can identify these systems, but his hubris and his callousness towards the reality
right.
of things.
But he doesn't... I don't think he ever believes he deserves a punishment for any way a person was treated. It's because of
it's not
his inability
that.
To predict
right.
the system
No, he
that
failed,
point.
And that's
yeah.
why.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. It's very insular like
yeah.
that. And to be honest, it's all lip service anyway. Even Giamatti's stuff about like how you treated people. It's not like we get some... Like he gets some report from some guy in Indonesia talking about all the sweatshops he owns.
Right.
You know, you never get a real grounded sense
of
just because this guy's making a lot of money and he's a capitalist or whatever,
right.
that he's intrinsically involved in explicit evil things. And that's what you said is also interesting about it, is that... That it does kind of take that. It's not, I mean, sure, you know, reviewers can do whatever they want. They can go through it and pick it apart and talk about, you know, dehumanizing nature of capitalism on people or, you know, whatever else. But the story is more interesting than that. And I think the most compelling philosophical stuff is stuff he has with Morton, who I don't even know what her position is in it. I think she says at one point maybe what her job
she's
is for him.
She's chief of theory.
Yeah, yeah, she's the theory one. So it's all theory. It's all
right.
the philosophical stuff. And they have that interesting discussion about how just saying the word computer sounds primitive.
Right.
Like, you know, like...
Yeah.
I liked that. I thought that was good. And she was one talking about sort of the deconstructive nature of things and systems and whatnot. None of it was necessarily, like, high-end or really over my head or anything. But they were neat subjects to... to get into. So, I mean, I don't know. It didn't overstay its welcome. It was, if it was long, it was only a little too long, and not really, because most of the interactions were interesting. You know, it was kind of a series of vignettes. I could have done without maybe him stopping in the hotel to have sex with the security guard. That seemed a little out of place to a degree, but there was some interesting discussion there about, like, safety and things. And then when he asked her to shock him, that was interesting, but right. You never got to see her do it, so you don't know if it happened. And that would have been, like I said, that would have been...
I feel like his rampant sexuality was, like... Well, there was two things that he still has some sort of human... connection to, or some sort of primal connection to, that was music and the sexuality, because he cared deeply about the death of the guy whose music actually touched him. That was terrible. I always wonder, whenever they make somebody up, some music right. up, like, why they couldn't have got someone to actually write something cool, instead of just, like, because it was just trashy dub garbage.
It was whatever, but that might have been also the point, too, is that it was, like, it Maybe. Wasn't something high-end, it was just, like, pop, whatever.
I think you're thinking too deeply there. I'm thinking they were trying to make something that would be, people would be like, oh man, that's kind of a cool jam.
Well, God, they got to make a good movie first, and then they got to make a really, 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 really profoundly good song, too. I mean, that's going to set you back a good bit.
But, like, you know,
who you can hire to do
supposed
that?
To be profound.
Who would
rap,
you hire? Yeah.
Dubby rap from, like, some guy from Africa, and the lyrics, whatever they had written, were just really trashy nonsense.
I mean, like I said, that's why I feel like that was probably the point.
I don't know.
But you never know. They could have tried hard and missed the mark on that. It's possible. I don't think that this movie necessarily hits every mark perfectly, but that's, you know, it is what it is. I always have trouble with, I mean, it has the blunt ending, but I don't know how much that bothers me. It didn't really bother me too much.
The cut to black without knowing what happens thing?
The cut to black thing, yeah, because it just kind of felt like... It felt a little more ominous than it had been, because they had been talking for about a full 15 minutes, it seems like, wandering around multiple times where either one of them could have done something. So it really was, I guess, basically an execution. And there were more unanswered questions than answered, obviously, you know. I mean, he wanted to go get a haircut from this old guy who had given him and his dad haircuts back in the day. Yeah. You get a sense that maybe he was trying to connect with something there in his childhood. Who knows?
And he had decided to go see him before anything bad had started happening. Like, I think when he gets in the car in the beginning, he knows the Yuan is already taking a bath or whatever. But
that
it's rebounding when he bet against it. Whatever.
The currency, the made up currency.
It's just the Chinese currency.
I don't. Is it? Is that Yuan, what it's really called now?
Yeah. Isn't it?
I don't know, man. I don't follow this stuff. Well, I thought that the Chinese currency was called something else.
Well, you'd know.
I didn't say I would know. I said I wouldn't know. It sounded kind of made up.
I think it's real.
Oh, cool. Well, why would he bet against it? That was a dumb move.
Oh, and I mean...
I mean, he it seems to me like that was sort
Chinese of, involvement in our system has been... growing for a while, but I'm thinking when he wrote this, that was all also pretty prescient, because
probably
when Delilah did, I mean, because, you know, now they own a great deal of our debt, basically. Anyway, what do you think? What do you think of Cronenberg's latest foray into science fiction, almost? Philosophical science fiction. Existenz, it was very Existenz-like. When it came down to it, Existenz had more of an action tinge to it.
Oh, sure. And Existenz...
And was more overtly sci-fi as well.
And it was also more more visually unique,
but,
I think.
But equally philosophical in conversation, in theme.
It had a lot more adrenaline to it, though. It had... which is kind of... Well, I don't know. I mean, it moved quicker. And even though this is in a car that's always moving, it's moving very little. And that's sort of also the joke, sort of, is that it's stuck in traffic a lot. But then he gets in, he gets out, he goes to a club, he goes to a hotel. I mean, it's... I don't know. I don't know if I would have preferred to just stay in that thing until he got to the barbershop or not, but...
You always go into what you would have preferred to happen,
I don't know,
but it's
I don't
irrelevant.
Know.
The movie is there. It's made. The art is what it is. So what is your take on the art without thinking where it could have gone?
Right. No, I know. And I always give my take on the art. I don't say, oh, it's not this, so I don't like it as much. I say it's not this.
You do that every time. You always do that.
No, I don't say, if it were this, I'd give it this, but it's not, so I give it this. I give it a 3 out of 5. It's a reliable 3 out of 5.
I think I gave it a 3.5, so we're pretty close on that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I want to watch every other year. I might never watch it again.
It's hard for me to divorce a filmmaker from his previous oeuvre. So I think about Eastern Promises, and
you're always making a top 10 list of somebody's work, so that like you're like, oh, if I give it this,
instance,
that would be higher.
People go back and think about the early body horror stuff and how great this and that is, but I don't think about them like that. And I know people love The Fly is so to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think Existenz is great.
Existenz
I think
is good.
Dead Ringers is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eastern Promises was one of my favorite movies that year. And what was interesting about that one was that he's not afraid to do whatever in a story. It's like he doesn't care what the audience expects from a story and how it's supposed to go. They're mostly Hollywood and plot point stuff like that. But I mean, he ends stuff in very unsatisfactory notes from what you should expect. Eastern Promises ends with a whimper. Absolutely ends with a whimper. It's a kind of a frightening whimper about an unknown future with these parties involved.
Right.
But the movie leading up to it was so fascinating. It's like, what does that ending mean to it? And, you know, it's about unknowable quantities and this and that, but I don't know. I love them. Naked Lunch is a fascinating film. And Burroughs was garbage. And the book is garbage. It's just nonsense written by a drug-addled psycho.
I think he was recovering at that point, which probably makes it more nonsensical, huh?
But the fact that he's like, that would make a neat movie, and people are like, really? Okay. I mean, because that's awesome, because it's got giant bugs.
I think he took this
stuff in it.
I think he took the novel and he took the sort of mythology around Burroughs and sort of combined them to create
and that's fascinating.
So you could do
that. That's what Soderbergh did with Kafka. So you give it 3 out of 5. I give it 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, Cosmopolis. It's worth checking out when you want to just listen to people talk about.
Oh my gosh! You always end it with some reason why it's really garbage.
No, it's not.
You talk about it like it's garbage, and then you're like 3 or 5. It's worth seeing when you're taking a dump and you don't really want to watch the screen, but you want to hear people talking in the background about things you don't care about. Is that what you're trying to say?
No. It is always hard with limited amount of time. When a certain thing comes out and it's good objectively for a purpose, but isn't necessarily like that's the best medium for it.
Right.
I'll say the same thing about like certain anime. It frustrates the hell out of me to see these quote unquote slice of life shows that might have a great little story about two characters after their college years, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's like, at the same time, it's like, why did you have to draw this? Just because it was based on a manga, you know?
Right.
You could have done it as live action for cheaper, you know? I mean, you know, if you could draw something, you could have 5-mile-high spaceships. You know, you can have so much great spectacle with the animation medium. And sure, you can do interesting, clever visual things in a more normal story with animation, too. But, it's always tricky with that. You know, so like, it's like I say, to say it's very talky is not necessarily a criticism. I think the conversations are interesting, and I'm the kind of guy that likes a lot of that stuff. But I'm trying to sort of let the audience know, hey, this isn't like, if you think this is going to have some kind of spy intrigue, and he's going to be, you know, like, pulling a girl with one arm while he's got a gun in another hand, and he's going through like a, you know, the sea of some rave. It's not, that kind of stuff isn't in this movie, you know? From the ad, maybe, from the trailer, you might think there's something like that.
When you say something is worth seeing, that just makes it sound like it's barely on the side of okay. And I felt like it was a fascinating watch. Whether or not it was spectacular at what it was attempting to do.
Yeah, I mean,
I felt it was very fascinating. And it wasn't one of those films where I feel like the flaws make it really fascinating. Because I'm not sure how many flaws Cronenberg's makes.
No.
I don't believe he's prone to flaws.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that the interesting discussions that happen in the movie are essentially like, they could be like TED Talks. And those would still be very good to see and good information, but in the context of like a narrative feature film, that's maybe not necessarily what the majority of an audience is looking for. But what I'm saying is that it's worth seeing for that. That's why I mean that. And, you know, and to me, that has a greater appeal. I'm trying to be a little bit of a...
contrarian?
No. I'm trying to be as populist as I possibly can, because you know I'm not at all populist, if anything. You know, I'm the one that rallies against sex scenes in TV shows and stuff. And you're like, that's what the people want. And I'm like,
yeah, that's what the people want. That's why you're not going to watch Game of Thrones.
No, I watch Game of Thrones. I don't know. I just think that sometimes it's an easy thing to go to. You know, we need to get a bunch of exposition out. And it's interesting exposition. I mean, they did that a little bit in this movie. But actually, no, they didn't. They kind of had the sex and then had the conversation after.
In both cases, yeah.
Well, that one was kind of conversation, the second one with the security guard. But that was probably one of the least interesting conversations, too. Because it was kind of just basic... Well, it was more character-driven, maybe, because he was kind of at least curious about his own safety on some level, even if it was just to talk with her about her job. So, yeah, 3 to 5. Cosmopolis, and you're 3.5?
3.5.
Good.
A rocket.
I bet that dog wishes he had a big red rocket.
Oh my gosh. They throw that stuff in there and they're just like, do they know?
Yeah.
That's for the adults, huh?
That's for the adults.
They're Pixar-ing it up a little bit, huh?
Oh, they're talking about that dog's huge bone.